I have a question for you. I want you to think of one time you were scared to do something, really scared, and everyone around you was telling you not to do it, but you did it anyways. How did that feel? I mean, despite the fact that it worked out or not, I'm ready to bet you were proud of yourself, and you should. Today, my guest and I talk about doing things scared. But before we get into that, let's cue some music. What's up, D-Squad? Happy Friday or happy whatever day it is when you're tuning in. I hope your week has been amazing. And if it hasn't, that's okay, because we get to try again next week. I'm Duchesse Iraduhaye, and you're listening to the Discovered Oasis podcast. I haven't been here for the past 2 weeks, but that's only because I wanted to give you some time to catch up on all the other episodes. And I hope you did that. Now, today I am bringing you a long conversation that I'm sure you will enjoy. I am sitting with Fabrice Manirakiza, who's somebody who's impacted so many lives through his work. And you will hear more on this episode, obviously. But Fabrice is really one of those people who don't need an introduction, because where would we even begin? But okay, let me try. Fabrice is a singer, a community leader, a TED Talk speaker. He's an entrepreneur, but most importantly, he is Burundian. And just for that reason, you guys, I am so excited to be talking to him. He's someone who's left his comfortable life in Australia to build something really powerful back in Burundi. He's building homes, creating job opportunities, and recently he made the headlines by becoming that person in charge of rebuilding Bujumbura's central market. And that is a big deal. So during this conversation, we talk about all of that, and we also get into what it means to redefine yourself, face your fears, and step into your purpose. Trust me, this is a good one. Oh, I've got a confession to make, but only after you listen to our conversation. So let's get into that. Let me just first say, welcome to the Discover the Oasis podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Is it the first time that you're doing a podcast like this or no?
It's not my first time. I used to do this in Australia with different hosts, but this is my first time to do it with Burundian, so
yay,
it's exciting because yeah.
Glad, because I know we're gonna talk about Australia, and yeah. I know we're gonna talk about why you used to do those interviews, but before we dive into all of that, I always start by asking my guests what their last names mean. So do you mind telling me what your last name means?
Thank you. So my last name is Manirakiza, which means God heals. And I think it has had a huge effect on my life, because whatever I do, I just feel like it represents who I am. Maybe you should ask me my nickname too.
Okay, yes, please. Is it the one that's on WhatsApp?
Yes, Deterrence of...
Yes, please. I wanted to ask, but I was like, should I? So I'm glad you mentioned it. What does that mean?
So Deterrence of who, it means the... how do I say this? Elephant conqueror, I would say.
Actually, oh, ni gutera inzovu.
Gutera inzovu, yes. Gutera inzovu. It's a name that I inherited from the refugee camp, and ever since I just felt like... that, and knowing that the inzovu, which is the elephant, is the biggest animal in the animal's kingdom, that is not defeated by any. So to have that kind of tag on my name is just like, I'm here to win.
I love it. I'm glad you mentioned that because, again, you touched on something that I wanted for us to talk about, which is you being a refugee and being in a refugee camp. I know you've told your story a couple times before, but for the people who might not know, how did you end up in a refugee camp? How did you get out of it?
Thank you. So basically, I was born during the struggle of Burundi. In 1993, the war broke out in Burundi, and then we ended up having a very huge civil war, which made, you know, almost half population of Burundians fleeing to the neighboring countries. So I and my family, we fled to Rwanda. We go to Rwanda, and after, you know, a couple of months, the Rwanda genocide kicked in, and we had to escape again, fleeing from Rwanda, going back to Burundi, where everything we had been destroyed. And thank God my parents kind of, you know, put us back online. They set us up. And when I was 8, unfortunately, all my parents was gone, which became a really misery for me. So I became an orphan boy, which I normally said I was a street boy, akama iwowo. But when we fled from Rwanda, going back to Burundi, my sister, my older sister, she fled to Tanzania. So throughout the time I was in Burundi, even from the time I became an orphan, she was in Tanzania. So when she heard that, you know, now I'm orphaned, there is no parents, and I'm the last kid in my family. So it wasn't that she felt that there was a huge part of me that is missing, which is to feel like, where is mom? Where is dad? You know? And so muri munkambi z'impunzi in a refugee camp, there was that time where, you know, the immigrations from all across the world would come, you know, interview the refugees to, you know, to find out what's the next step is, because there was a huge number of refugees who could never face back Burundi based to the trauma that they went through. But before that started, when my sister told my other siblings to send me in Tanzania refugee camp, I personally thought it was going to be better life. I thought it was going to be better because she didn't explain. She didn't tell them that I would have to end up waiting in a refugee camp. So I thought I go to Tanzania and there will be a private jet waiting for me. And then off we go to US or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
But I ended up living in a refugee camp for more than a year, and I can tell you, living in refugee camp is literally like living in hell. Like, there is no enough food. There is no schooling system. There is literally nothing. It's not somewhere where you can dream or wake up and be like, I've got somewhere that I need to go to work. And I remember UN. The World Food Program would bring food thinking that it would last us for a fortnight, but it would only last us for a week. And for the rest of the time, we would have to risk it to go outside the refugee camp to work for the locals. And even every time you get caught by the Tanzanian law forces, you would literally get punished. In a refugee camp, it was so terrible. It was where you hear that your friend is being killed and you take that as a normal thing. That's how terrible it was. But I tell my, you know, my fellow Burundians, my fellow Africans, magume nicho kibi cya mbere gishobora gushikira umwana w'umuntu. I mean, wars is the last thing we should ever wish for. And I can tell anybody who's listening to us, just be the ambassador of peace, you know?
Do you still remember who the person was that gave you the nickname?
Yes. There was a guy, I can't remember his name, but he was a guy, urabona mu nkambi baragira ibintu byo kujya gusenya to collect the wood fire. And And this is a guy who used to wake up literally like 5 o'clock in the morning, and he will start marching, and he will get where he's going to collect the wood stick, at least by in the afternoon. So you can imagine how long it was. Now imagine coming back with more than 30, 40, 50 kilos on your head. Man, he was just a champion. So this is the guy who inspired me. And now every time I was like, I just appreciate it, So I inherited the name from him.
Yeah, oh my God, that is beautiful. Being in in that environment, you did mention something that to me is important to bring it up. You said it's not an environment where you can wake up, go to work, and dream of a better future. Do you remember what kept you going?
So the thing is that my life in a refugee camp, it was shattered. So there wasn't it was like it wasn't like what you see today, you know what I mean? So this is why every time I talk and every time I do anything that goes in public, I tell them, look, God is the guy, like God is the power that I work for, because the Lord has transformed my life and he has gave me the different parts of life. So in a refugee camp, I was just like others. I didn't have a dreams, this and that. And to have a grace to go to Australia, it has been like coming from hell to heaven. And going in Australia, that's when I went like, what? I can actually make my dream come true. I can actually, dream again. I can, there is hope for better future. So in Australia, I think that's where I started getting that kind of, restoring my hope, understanding that I'm actually in a position where I can do whatever I want. And that's when I just got the dream. That's when I got the revelation of wanting to change the world. So I am a young guy who's crazy enough to think that I am, I will, and I will continue to change the world, at least around where I can reach.
Yes. Of course, maybe today it's easy talking about it because you've got that revelation and that vision. But when the young Fabrice that arrived in Australia was like, okay, finally something better, right? At what point did you decide to start singing?
I think it started from when I even started my sort of youth, I would say human development. Now, going to Australia, I come from a country where we speak no English at all. So I remember going to Australia. It was actually, there's always a funny story I always tell how going to Australia, there was these crazy rumors that they used to say in a refugee camp that we shouldn't go where there is white people because white people eat black people, In fact, it was so crazy. There are people who refused to go just because of that fear. I remember we went to Australia and it was just life changing. And we get to Australia, we speak no English. There is all these white people waiting us at the airport. There was a guy waiting us at the airport with my sister's name, which I co quickly told my sister, that's the man who's going to eat us, And it was terrible. But I look back and just it was those moments where you're just going through a lot at the same time, So we went to Australia, and then we got there was a social worker who helped us to integrate into the community, and we started English. So I did English as a second language course for the I think it was about 4 months, and after that I started high school. I started from year 7, and then just because I was trying to be smart, I was trying to push hard, because I think in the culture of Burundi there is this there is this understanding that education is the future, which actually It's true, because more you get educated, is more you have more chances of having better life. You know, it's common sense, it's everywhere. And school became literally like the how do I say, the corridor of wanting to understand what the world is. And what you get to realize, it's like always I said, only Burundians realize how smart they are, you know. Especially Burundians, Africans, this is in the most intelligent humankind I've ever seen. But just because what we've been through, the colonial system, the struggles, the wars, it has literally shattered our eyes, it has literally shattered our intelligence, that we feel, for me, I look at it more like a poison. I think I would call it brainwashed. We've been brainwashed to the point that we don't understand ourselves. So this was proven by the time I came from year 7 and jumped to year 9. So I actually didn't do year 8. And it was like, you know, I'm in a first world country. There's these kids, you know, they complain, oh, you know, there's no more lunch box and all that, you know. And then all you do, you just want to go to library and study and study and study, you know. So I finished my high school in 2011, and I started studied university doing international business, which I've done my bachelor in international business. But on the other hand, like you was asking, it was during the high school that I discovered the talent which was in me. I mean, I always had that talent, because in a refugee camp we would play drums on the oil cans, Ariya Madebe. We would always play drums when you're singing these songs, Mr. Nice and all that. And there was, you know, there was this little concert they would, you know, organize, and you just want to feel in, you know, and you just, there was that something that wanna that pulls you. But because you know there is not a, you know, a spotlight to showcase, it would never come across your mind. So during my high school in Australia is when I started discovering that, you know, the talent was in me. And then I just started doing music, and throughout my music is where I met my music manager. And he started spotting the talent of inspiration and motivation speaking in me. He's like, bro, you got golden story, you know. You come from a third world country. Here you come to a first world country. The gap in between, especially these people, these young people, because, you know, the young people in Australia, they will complain about, you know, their phone brightness. It's like, oh, my phone is not bright enough. It's like, dude, I come from where we complain about having a meal a day, you know, and then you're complaining about this, you know. So being able to realize that, it gave me a stage to start going to different schools, conferences, universities, just to share my stories of resilience, restoring hope. And for me, throughout the time, it has been empowering the young people and empowering the next generation. Because in Australia, I can't ignore the fact that discrimination is, you know, it was something that, you know, will raise up in here, especially towards the you know, the migrant Africans. And, you know, I will go to a school where they never seen a black person speaking, you know. And here I come, you know, I'm talking to them, you know, we are talking, I'm spitting bars, you know, I'm putting music on. They're like, you know, the Africans are ain't cool, like ain't bad, you know, they're the coolest, you know. And this is the young people who's in the next 10, 20 years, they will become the prime minister, they will become the minister. So that's why what kept me make, you know, it kept me thinking that, you know, no matter what it is, I'm changing the world. I'm here to keep going, and just to keep going. So that's how music started growing in me.
I will make sure I put some links to your old musics, because people need to know that you're not just this entrepreneur that we see, because you have many talents. You said again something that I want for us to dive into, and that's the part where you discovered that you have that talent of motivational speakers or speaking. And I think it's during that time that you kind of got the vision of maybe taking some of the Australians that you would meet to Burundi, right? To kind of show them where you're from. And you started a business. You had a business idea that I think is important for us to talk about. What was the moment that you got that idea?
You know, every time I was coming up, I was growing up, you know, having that kind of human development in me, I always being that person who want to change the world. Well, I would say I've always been that person who want to change the way people think. And within that, I wanted to get involved in whatever comes my way so I can actually be an inspiration to others. You know, I can prove that we are capable of something big. And within that, I wanted to keep literally the tag of my culture. Like, I wanted to be a representative of my culture. So it made me stay very close, very closer to Burundian culture. So that's how I started, you know, I first started becoming a youth leader within the community, which I did for about a year. And after that, it was crazy enough that I got elected to be the chairperson, the chairperson of the whole organization of Burundians in Victoria, which was huge. I was only, I think by this time I was about 18, going to 20s. And within this, it made me just increase my wisdom of how to deal with people, how to, especially Burundians, because Burundians, we also have our issues, you know. So it made me dive in to understand the wisdom in Burundi, but to also keep on representing the country. So I became the Burundian community president, which I did for quite a few years. You know, we would apply for fundings. We would do our own Burundian drums. We would actually physically dig them. I sometimes goes back and I'll be like, we need to do a documentary of how do we make drums. We would literally buy logs and then we dig them physically for let's say for a month. And next thing you know, we go and buy a whole cow and we slot it and we split the meat just to get the skin cow.
Wow. This is such an interesting story. This is amazing.
Ingoma zo muri Melbourne, ingoma zo muri Victoria nitwe twazikoreye. I would apply for fundings from the government and then we would get, you know, tons of money to do it. So niha handi twavuga kwa gatandatu tuzoje kuyimba ingoma, niko twabivuga. Tukacha tugenda tukabaga impene tukarya.
I love it.
I know, it's just been amazing. So I was actually the leader of the community, but also the drum group for some bit. So within that, when I was doing my music and when I was you know, connected with the community, so when I was coming up with the music, that's how I funded that. The story that I have coming from a third world country, coming from where I faced those challenges, you know, those challenges, it's actually a story to tell, because there's somebody who might be feeling miserable and who would think it's at the end of the world. But then when they hear this kind of story, when they hear a podcast like this, they'll be like, hang on a second, I'm not alone. Actually, I'm not, it's not that bad. You know what I mean? We all go through tough time, but the strongest thing is to overcome those, obstacles or those challenges, And for us, it wasn't a choice. It was an escape. You know what I mean? You go to Australia, there is a choice of going to see a therapy. There's a choice of, seeing someone. But where we come from, there wasn't that. You know what I mean? It's just a survival mode, So with that story, it became golden. It became golden to the point that I have been in more than 800 schools throughout Australia and East Timor. I did New Zealand. I even did Uganda. I even did here in Burundi for, I think, there is a Catholic school in Rutana. I can't remember, but yeah, it was great. It was great. This was in 2017. When I came to visit to Burundi. So there was this time where I came to Burundi and ActionAid, which is a non-for-profit organization, which is huge worldwide. I was doing some work with them, like doing shows, and then they would do the fundraising. It was the key, like we was the front dudes, you know what I mean? The ambassadors. And they heard that I want to go to Burundi, and they say, hang on, we're gonna sponsor you, and then you be our ambassador when you go. I mean, you've done us good. We maybe this is a way of showing back, So I came to Burundi. ActionAid took me and took me all across Burundi. We literally took a whole week, which we went all over Burundi. And every time we're driving through our Burundi, I'm just realizing this is a hidden paradise, This is the landscape, the people, the beauty, the happiness in people. It just took me by the storm, And it was this time where I dreamed of wanting to do bigger for Burundi. And I thought about, wanting to bring people from Australia to come and see Burundi. So I funded my first company and I called it Come and See Burundi. The whole vision around it was, it's just what it says, come and see Burundi.
Literally.
Yeah, it was in, for me, the first, I mean, the sector, we focused in a tourism operation. But then later I got to realize it's tough because people don't understand the sector of tourism. Because tourism is it's where you open doors for the outsiders to come and see. They spend money, they enjoy, they invest. And I think that's something that we were missing by this time. And even right now we were still struggling, which then by then it made me when like this will make me tired. And I mean, no, I did not actually switch and be like I give up. I kept on rolling. Now this is where my entrepreneurial development kind of came into to pass, because it was that kind of struggle that I kept up with, knowing that I want to do bigger. There is something that I need to do for Burundi. There is something that is calling me to do Burundi, to build Burundi, to transform Burundi. And then it was this time when I was in Bujumbura at Cafe Gourma, and I'm looking at this town and I'm like, Burundi is not built. And it was a revelation of God, which told me, you should build this city, you should build this country. And there you go. So I got that revelation, and I started connecting dots. And I started realizing everyone in Burundi and diaspora community, they all complained how they have been ripped off with their housing development projects, and they've been ripped off by family members, they've been ripped off by their friends. I mean, it's a common story, actually, not just in Burundi, but throughout the Africa. And For me, realizing this gap, which was a huge gap, I was like, hang on, this is the solution. So I will tell the diaspora, I'm gonna, build you homes. I'm gonna fund you banks which can give you mortgage loan in Burundi. I'm gonna become your guarantee. You just, I think I should have, my company, I should have called it Come Invest in Burundi after Come and See Burundi.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. I was taking note of something that you mentioned. I was like, oh, that is so good. Tell me about the time when you were at Café Gourmand and you realized, or you got that vision. You went back to Australia, but you didn't come right away. You didn't come back to Burundi right away. What happened in between, and how did you end up coming back?
So one of the challenges that we Burundians abroad, that we all have a history of, or we are still complaining about, it's finding people to trust, the loyalty. And the loyalty is just a huge gap. There is no transparency, there is no accountability, either to the people we work with, either to, again, on the other hand, just like we are saying, Australia, America, Canada, this is a first world country. This is somewhere where 2 o'clock is 2 o'clock. In Burundi, 2 o'clock is like 4 o'clock, which we still don't understand, And within that, it makes it harder. So when I got that vision of getting into real estate and property development, because I already had the company of Come and See Burundi, I had the employees, we had an office and all that, and it was just that kind of, I was that diaspora member who's more like, I go to Australia and then I will come for 2 weeks and do this and then I'll go back, And then Australia, Burundi, the idea of remote work, it doesn't work. It's a physical work, it's a presence. You gotta be here to get things happening, and became a great challenge, because every time I was trying to push my HR, it wasn't working, to the point even that even the emails, like literally writing emails, I would have to write them from Australia, and it was very challenging. And because I'm from a family which we don't have, like, my siblings, none of them has completed a university, so there wasn't that kind of a person who I would look at and say, this person has intelligence, at least education intelligence already within them with our trainings. So it became a struggle. So within that, I lost so much throughout that time. And I always praise the Lord for the sister that I had, who would always, this is the sister I lived with in Australia, who's very religious. So she would always like, Fabrice, I can see you have dream. I can see you want to go far in Burundi. I can see you want to build Burundi. But whatever you're thinking, it will never happen if you are not there. These people, the people in Burundi, and the way we are here, it's completely different mindset. She would always tell me that, and I'm that kind of a person who really want to inspire and change people. So I felt like it was a way of transforming these young people who was working for me, for them to understand what the world is like. Because every time I look at, even right now, I look at Burundi and feel like maybe Burundi is still behind, for quite few years, even though sometimes it's a positive thing, but it makes us lay back. It makes us don't wanna catch up, So, and she would always be like, you just have to go in Burundi and see there, and that's how things can work. And I'm like, come on, man, I'm in Australia, the world's one of the world's richest country. I'm comfortable. I'm famous. I was actually famous. Yeah, I was winning awards, and I was kicking goals. I'm like, no, I'm not, hell no, it's not gonna happen. And it was when I came in 2016, and I couldn't find people to work with. But when I came back in 2017, I was lucky enough to find a young person who I felt like he was connected with my thoughts. And that's how when I started the company and all that, just trying to change. Because even though in 2012 I came to Burundi and I had the idea of come and see Burundi, I wrote it in my phone, but because there wasn't anybody that I can trust, it didn't operate. It was just a dream, it was just like, one day I'm gonna do this. In 2017, that's when I registered the company, and then I came back in 2017 at the same year. And I was able to convince the Burundi Housing Bank, which is a bank that I betaid bank. It used to be a housing fund, but now it's a corporate bank, housing bank. And I here come, I tell this bank, look, I've got tons of Burundians, because when I went back to Australia, I did kind of a data collection, and I just got to realize everybody in the diaspora, it would be like, can that happen in Burundi? We are ready, So I spotted the opportunity, and then I came and I was able to convince the bank, because when you believe in yourself, nothing that is impossible to you.
Yes.
And then I convinced the bank. I told them, look, you got zero risk, because what it is, I'm gonna get clients. I will give you clients. You give them bank mortgage loan. I will tell my clients to put down payment. So if somebody from Australia put 10%, they are not going to give up because they already have something they've implemented. So, and if you give them a mortgage loan, we're actually building a house here. So this person will not come and put it in a plane and take it away. So at the end of the day, the bank was like, actually, that works well. And then for me, I'm like, oh, I got people who's ready. And then I go to these people and they're like, bro, you are about to make our dreams come true. So it's like, what? It actually works. And then, I came to Burundi. I faced so much challenges and struggle of wanting, making people believe the idea, because it was hard for people, especially Burundians. In diaspora, mortgage loan, housing loans is very, common. We all have mortgages. But then you come to Burundi, the idea was like, what are you talking about? And for me, the innovation that I introduced, which is very innovative, I introduced what I call off-plan purchase, where we do the design, the architect designs, and then you buy the house, you put down payment, you can either pay cash, you can either pay in installments, or you can just we can take you to the bank, like we did with the housing bank, and then the bank would just give you a mortgage loan, and we signed contracts. So it was hard for the locals to understand it, but thank God some of the directors in the bank saw it coming. It was like, this could work, so they gave me a chance. So I first wanted to go and do it in Gitega, which at the end of the day, they went like, dude, this dude is coming to steal our plots, It was hard for me to convince the people, but then somewhere, somehow, the government allowed me to go and implement. Because in one word, what I was doing, I was introducing gated communities in Burundi. And I was like, we can develop tons of homes at same place which would improve infrastructure and improve security, and we restore, community integration in our communities, And the bank, thank God, they believed me. We did some contracts, and then I went to Gitega, but then I started got challenged. I lost so much money out here. And I felt like he was dying. And because you remember how I told you that I had sister who would always pray for me and say, look, you're just gonna go to Burundi. So she was a person who, when I got a chance, when the government told me you can go start your project in Gitega, I was like, oh, the government had just given me a green light. In Gitega, everything is gonna go good. And then I went to in Gitega and I ended up getting kicked out when I already invested. So my sister, I had to borrow money from her. I brought it and then I invested in the plot which I was shown in Gitega. And at the end, they started making me look like a byword, like I'm a thief, which became so challenging. And because the bank had the plot in Katemirwar in Bujumbura, right next to the airport, which I went like, hey, this is even better. When one door closes, trust me, there is a better one to open.
Before we talk about all the challenges, there is something that you mentioned about collecting data. And I feel like, I don't know if it happens to you, let me know, but I would always get questions about people asking me whether or not they should leave the Western world with a job, or if it's best to go and invest in Burundi or in Africa. And I'll always say, I don't think there's one way to do things, right? You just need to have all the information it is that you need about the field you want to work in. So if it's investment, make sure you study the market, make sure you have all this information. So I love the fact that you touched on all this data, all this information that you got from Burundians in the diaspora in Australia before you come in and try to, to talk about this project with the bank. Do you feel like sometimes that is one of the things maybe people in the diaspora lack to do, and they think, you know what, I'm just gonna go, I have money, and I'm just gonna invest without really knowing what it is that they want to invest in?
100%. I think that's where things go wrong. They fail to understand that Burundi, it's a third world country. So human capacity, it's not at the same leverage with, wherever we are coming from. So that means our understanding is different. The way we value time is different. The value of money is different. Like, you see, in the Western world, we are you eat when you work, you know what I mean? And time is money, the value of hustling hard, the fact that Burundi is seen as a poor country, for me, I'm looking at it in two different ways. I always say is that I look at it as a two-faced card, which with back and forth. So the reason why I say that, I feel like there is a side of Burundi where everybody sees, everybody think Burundi is the world's poorest country, there is no employment, there is no fuel, there is this and that, literally this kind of regular complaints, which is normal because people see things differently, and there is another side where Burundi, for me, I have been it's something that I call it, that I call a revelation of God. It's a calling, but it's also how do I say it? It's just a hidden side of Burundi where it's just golden, where you get to realize how this country is a paradise, how you get to realize this country is so rich that it's the world's richest country. Literally, you know. And Burundi is the world's peaceful country. Like, you could go to a club and walk home 2 o'clock in the morning and no one touches you, you know? Which is like, what, you know? And apart from it being peaceful, you look at it in the way of opportunities. You know, there is tons of opportunities here in Burundi. You can literally do anything and you can become, you know, you can get to the top of the world, you know. I am a guy who comes from, you know, a family where we don't have anybody who's powerful. We don't have you know, anybody we can be like, oh, you know, this person, this uncle of mine has made me become who I am. But then I have been able to come up just because I have seen the other side of Burundi, the other, you know, side of the card. I have came up to the point where there is tons of Burundians who's like, oh, you are inspiring us, you know, you are doing the. I tell people, I started the first project that I did, or the second project I did, it values 50 billion Burundian money. And I started it 8 months ago with no zero from Bu, with no zero, literally with no money, you know, just because I understood and I got to understand these two side things. I went to look at the bright side. You know, I looked at Burundi as a land of opportunity, and I was able, right now, I'm doing a project that is 50 billion, value of 50 billion, and I just crossed more than 50% of it.
Tell me more about that project. I know about it, but for the people who don't know.
So my flagship right now, it's in real estate development, in property development. So here in Burundi, I have been able to do my first gated community. Well, the Burundi's first gated community, which I called it Come and See Burundi Village. It was a project which values around 10 billion Burundian money. And you know, it's a project that I started doing what I call off plan. So we would do the architect designs. And then we just inspire the diaspora to invest back home. And they will, you know, send the money back home to build these homes. And because the winning card or the winning sword that I've been able to hold and go on with is what I call loyalty and trust. If you are a young person and you are listening to this podcast, loyalty and trust is the pride. I mean, it's the only way that would make you conquer the world, you know, because when people trust you, they will fight for you, they will support you. I have gained that trust in the Burundian diaspora, and because of the trust that I have gained, they funded somebody that they can trust. So they will send money back home and jumps in my account, jumps in my business accounts just to develop their dream homes. It's so the project that I'm doing, I've done the first gated community, which is 28 house. I'm doing the second one, which called Lakeview Paradise Estate, which I'm developing on the shores of Tanganyika, which is literally a paradise, you know.
I mean, any shores of Tanganyika is a paradise. Just being by the lake, it's paradise in itself.
Absolutely. And it's just beautiful. So this one we are going to have we are doing it in two phases, which the total of homes will be about 100 20 150 homes. And the other project that I've done, actually, Lakeview Paradise is the third, but the second one is called Fab Homes, which is right next to right next to CS Book Village. And it's townhomes, 18 townhomes, And you know, the crazy thing I remember when I launched this project of Fab Homes, just because the trust that I have gained from people for having a successful project, first project, I tell you, within 1 week, these 18 homes were sold out.
You know, what's so inspiring about your story and everything we're talking about, it's being able to see that just going off the vision that you have, even though you didn't have all this money stored somewhere, all these resources, heritage from your parents or grandparents, just believing that we can change the country, that there is so much potential. Because if we're honest, if you're from, like outside of the country, amakuru twamaturonga, right? We always hear all these bad things happening, but sometimes you just gotta be able to see beyond that and be like, you know what? I trust in my vision and I know something can happen. So for the people who are listening, sometimes they might not grasp the how huge it is for you to be able to go from one project to the second one to the third one because you just believed in the fact that it was possible. And that to me is so priceless. I love it.
It is so good because I don't know how many Christians or Catholics listening to us, but like I said before, I'm sorry again, I'm gonna keep bringing God into my talking. You see, I'm a guy who believed that the wisdom that God gave to Solomon, it has been given to all of us. But I always says, who is able to sit down with God and tell God, how do I use this wisdom? Because I feel like everybody's busy, no one wants to give time to God. So that's where we go wrong. And I don't know, I'm not showing off or blagging off, but I have been lucky enough to get time with God and say, God, how do I do this, how do I do your work, And he revealed it to me. God can tell you something, but it's up to you to take action or not. He will never force you to take an action. So even though that God is there, it's your hassle. Last time I said how for me, I always feel like I'm a go-getter. So being a go-getter is being able to spot the opportunity, being able to spot the possibility and go for it, And no matter what we hear, like you said, in the Western world or wherever we are, Burundi's been blacklisted. It's a country, it's a world's poorest country. There is no jobs, there is no money, there is. But I tell people, man, I make more money in Burundi more than what I would be making in Australia. And it's possible that I have seen people here in Burundi, even if you give them $1 million, they will never remigrate and go to live in Australia. They will say I'm comfortable. And look, don't get me wrong. Don't think this is the people who make dirty money. I'm talking about people who has made clean money. I tell people, look, it's simple. The formula is just like somebody will be listening this podcast and say, I'm going to do like what Fabrice is doing. Come through and do it. It's so simple. I'll teach you how to do it. Just tell people, tell your family members, I'm going to develop you. I'm going to build your homes in Burundi. It is very possible. And Burundi or Africa is still, I mean, look how much the West has been attracted to Africa right now. The world, everyone, we talk about Chinese, we talk about Russians, they all spot the growing opportunity in Africa. So we, the Africans needs to look back and understand that the golden land is calling, it's here. It's not in America. It's not in Canada. It's not in Australia. go in Canada, get smart, understand, redefine yourself and get back and build your empire and change the world.
You know, when we talk like this, sometimes it feels like it's easy to say, but it's not easy in action. And you and I talked about having that fear, you know.
Yeah. The thing is that, like we said before, the number one enemy, the thing that would never let you explore the world is fear. The thing that would never succeed in life is fear. The thing that would never make you take a step forward is the fear. But if you overcome your fear, you are ready to go. If you look at every successful person, and this person tells you a story, if there is a story that doesn't go against fear, that's not a story. Every successful person, they don't exist. So if you are Burundian, if you are an African, and you think you just gonna come back to Burundi and everything is gonna be like in Canada, bro, it can't work. You gotta be ready to go over your fear, because that will make you want to. That will make you face your enemies, because, like we said before, it's not just Burundi. We are talking right now. We hear that it's the wars in DRC and all that. Maybe this problem we see in our community, it's where the opportunity lies. Because what can you solve if there is no problem? So it's really understanding that, the struggle, the problem we see, trust me, that's the opportunity. Think about construction. Think about property development. Bujumbura is not even built 5%. So you got 95%, you got 99% of, construction that is needed, infrastructure, and all that. And the other thing we fear, it's just redefining yourself and understanding yourself, understanding your mission, understanding your revelation. That's when you will get to overcome your fear. And this happens when you sit down and do your life plan and say, where do I want to be in 10 years?
You know what it is for me, Fabrice? Sometimes it's even doing the things scared. It's still doing it when you're like, because I'm sure even for you, there were so many times where you almost were like, oh, this is, why am I even doing this? Like you said, your sister was the one to at some point be like, go there and act on it and do things. So I know there were at some point, and you can talk about it, points where you were like, oh, this is so hard, and almost wanting to quit. But then again, it goes back to what you just said, knowing your vision and knowing what your call is will help you to keep pushing through,
Sometimes when I do these conferences, when I, do keynote speaking, most of the invitations I get, people expect me to tell them how to be business people. People expect me, is like, bro, you've made it. How do we build homes? How do we make money? How do we do? And I'm like, do you know that we are different? Therefore, you could find out more than 50%, you are not created to be an entrepreneur. Don't get the reality lied to you that, oh, you gotta be this because everybody's doing this. That doesn't work that way. Which is why you need to go back to yourself and understand what's your talent. Who are you? Where you want to be? You could be there, and you was created to be a singer. You was created to be a politician. Just redefine yourself and understand where your talent, your calling, your vision is, So within that, the problem we're stuck in right now, we are judged by the world, we are judged by our families, We are judged by our friends, and we get trapped within that, which is why we, doing this podcast, we need young people should listen to this. You need to understand, you are the king of your life. You are the master of your life.
What would you have to say about someone who has a vision but somehow doesn't have the right contacts? Because that is something that sometimes comes up. It's like, yeah, but I don't know anybody who's doing this, or I don't know anyone in this sector. What was it like for you when you first moved? Did you know the people? Did you have any contact at a bank? Who did you know?
The thing is that I don't believe that somebody can sit down and say, oh, I don't have contacts, I don't have this and that. That means that's not your talent. Because you got a fear in you that tells you don't look for it. But if it's your call, even today, you could be having a contact of all the banks in Tanzania. So it that's something that is gonna spark you. I remember it was in I think it was 2014, 2016, I can't remember, when I was in Australia and I was like, this housing revelation already was in me. And the other revelation was being able to do some hustling here in Africa, because I would see shows of people living like kings. I would see shows of people like, I'm like, man, I'm capable of doing this. So it didn't give me peace just to sit down and be comfortable in Australia. So I took a flight and I came to Burundi and I did a tour. I went to Tanzania. And I went to Uganda by bus. I went by bus just to understand what's the landscape, just to understand how do people move around, And because I did this, I did that, it made me understand the culture that I was trying to fit in, that I was trying to position myself in. So if somebody who wants to move back, don't use an excuse that you don't have a contact. If it's your call, you won't tell anybody that. You'll be like, man, I'm ready to go. And if somebody wants to invest back home, either Burundi or Africa, throughout, you gotta learn the culture. You're gonna come through. You're gonna spend here 6 to 1 year. 6 months to 1 year, just learning and losing money. I'm sorry to say that. You got to be ready. Don't you see? Because we come from the first world countries, we feel like that things work smoothly. You see, even if you look at in Australia, you look at in US, and go and let's say in US there is this, the biggest bank is JP Morgan, right? And then go look at the stories of JP Morgan. Did they start that day and make money? There is a way, there is time of challenges that you're gonna know that this is part of story. An entrepreneur to start making money, you gotta, it's called, I think it's 1001 days. I can't remember the phase, but there is a period of time literally where you gotta feel like, oh, I'm gonna give up. Oh, I'm gonna do this and that. You'll be challenged by your own soul, by your own spirit. But remember, if you don't go through that, you got no story to tell.
I completely agree. And being okay with losing money too, like you're saying, because sometimes we're scared of it. We're scared of what people are gonna say. Oh, they know I'm from the diaspora. If they see me losing money, what are they gonna think? But it goes back to what we're saying. Stop hearing other people's voice in your mind and, just pursue your dream or your vision. I love that. Today, you have decided to live in Burundi. What do you think, if you had to pick one or two things, What makes life in Burundi so worth it for you?
Food. That's number one. Food is just food. Like, it's organic, it's cheap. And the opportunity of providing for others. So I'm doing business where I'm employing more than 500 people a day. And I'm like, bro, like, how much money do you need to live in this world, you know? But remember, creating those memories in these people, that would make your name last forever, you know? So it's about transforming lives. It's about providing for others. So first of all, in one word, is food and just providing for others.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. So this is a question that I often ask my guests, but that is such a beautiful answer. Because we live in a community as Burundians and as Africans, and we almost never do things just for ourselves. We always do it for our family, for all the people around us. And that is a perfect example of what it is to be an African, being able to support others too. So such a beautiful answer.
Oh, yes. And it comes from the diaspora. We got to understand the opportunity that we've had to go abroad and be able to learn, be able to have what I would call first world experience. There is so much gap that we can fill. There is so much bridge we can create. And there is so much capacity building that we can help our brothers and sisters. I have Burundians and I have people from the diaspora who've came back and started hospitals and started schools and started business that is providing, it's providing life back to these people. And people got to understand, there is no white person who's going to come and do this with that kind of patriotic heart.
No, never.
This is gonna be done by we.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I had two questions. Well, I want to say maybe one question. You've talked about Tanzania. You went to Uganda. What is one African country that you're dying to visit?
Oh my God. South Africa. I just want to go to South Africa.
Tell me why.
And I'm sorry to say it, but parties like music. I'm sorry. I was trying to not say that, but there it is.
Now, D Squad, this is confession time. You know that saying in Kirundi, if you manhibi said zirana? Yeah, it applies here. During the recording, Fabrice and I struggled with technology. His power went out, his Wi-Fi was no longer working, my internet was so unstable, and I unfortunately lost some of our conversation. Not a lot of it, and you will know if you've listened to this podcast for a while by the questions I asked my guest at the end. But because of how super patient Fabrice was during the entire evening, and mind you, it was around midnight, 1 a.m. for him, I didn't want to bother him with recording again. And he was willing to do it, but I was like, oh my God. And yeah, I really want to take this moment to thank him for his patience and his kindness and his willingness to do this again. But really also to all of my guests, because I can tell you guys, we've faced some challenges. I just don't talk about it here, but we've been through things. So thank you, Fabrice, for doing this with me. And I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. And I hope it was a reminder that sometimes the most fulfilling path or journey isn't necessarily the easiest one. It's one that challenges you to grow, as Fabrice said, to take risks and to believe in what you're building. Fabrice's story is really proof that you know, stepping out of your comfort zone can lead to something really meaningful. So make sure you share this with your friends, like this episode, and follow this podcast to make sure you don't miss anything. And like I always say, no matter where you are, there's always a path to discovering your own oasis. I'll talk to you soon.